Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Sense defending anymore. Lloyd's got to get this pass off to Rapinoe, and everybody's got to bomb forward now. Rapinoe gets the crossing. It's towards Wombat. Oh, Evie Wombat has saved the USA's life in this World Cup.
Welcome to Upfront on Football Ramble Presents. I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
It was a depleted fixture list in the WSL, but both Manchester clubs took their chance to shine. We ask whether fortunes are finally turning on both sides of the city. We also check in with two sides that are vying to join them in the WSL, Liverpool and London City Lionesses, who are both reaping the rewards from two very different approaches. And we preview the Asian Cup, which kicks off on Thursday, and have a look at the FIFA Best Awards. That's an indecent effort from distance. That's a very good effort. Erin Cuthbert. Goodness me. Chloe.
Hello.
You got out of a long trip up north.
I didn't get out of a long trip.
You got out of it.
Up north. I just, you know.
I'm suspicious.
I was very dedicated at training this week, obviously. We had a big game ahead of us and things didn't go to plan on Friday night. So it wasn't a case of like me, you know,
Friday
night.
How did it happen? How did you break your finger?
Well, I was obviously heroically going down for an amazing dive, which I obviously saved.
Amazing.
And another goalkeeper that I was working with at the time was obviously coming towards me, and my finger caught in the middle.
Sabotage.
It maybe. I mean, I've not accused her of that, and I won't.
Well, with her
do.
Foot, with her hand, what happened?
With her foot, yeah. So, and I felt it going. I was like, no, it's, you know, you have little knocks and things, and you know, niggles and training. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to power through and I'm going to keep on playing.
And then you remembered you've got Durham
some,
at the weekend.
Was this some kind like of like intense one-on-one mano-a-mano goalkeepers union training? Because what were you doing just like so close to proximity to each other?
I was diving at feet and then she was going to play the ball. Yeah, and I sort of went to go and smother the ball and then my finger got trapped in the middle and I was like, yeah, I was trying to be really heroic though because I was just like, oh, okay, well, you know, these things happen. I'll carry on, see how it goes. And yeah, then I went to A&E and... Homerton said otherwise.
Goalkeeping is not for the faint-hearted, my friends.
It is not. I mean, the state of these fingers.
What's the worst injury you've ever had, actually?
Concussion. I think it was, I'd gone from Spurs to Arsenal and then played my first game with Arsenal against Spurs. And then someone lobbed me and I ended up smashing my the back of my head against the metal goalpost.
Ouch.
And yeah, I just bled everywhere and ruined the Arsenal shirts. Yeah.
Did you save the ball though? That saved the goal.
I absolutely did not. Oh. So it was well worth it.
So the injury was not to get out of Durham. We believe you. Thousands wouldn't. Let the record show, let the minutes of this episode show that it was an accident and Chloe definitely wanted to go to Durham.
That is on record now. I'm also a lawyer, so everything that I say is legally valid.
Well, we have the transcript for this episode.
Legally
now.
Valid, that's the phrase, isn't it?
We didn't have a full set of fixtures yet again in the WSL. Two games cancelled, Chelsea Everton and Arsenal Reading for COVID and injuries, a kind of mix of that. But I feel like this weekend, although obviously we saw Leicester hit back, which was huge, beating Brighton and really kind of changes the narrative yet again for the relegation battle, I think that's going to potentially go like right to the last day, which is exciting. But it did feel like this weekend was kind of all about Manchester. Was that quite good?
Manchester.
Was that quite a good accent?
I'm not going to do
Manchester.
That.
Manchester. And actually, throwback. Does anyone remember that video, Georgia Stanway, on the bus? It was like a City men and women open top bus parade to celebrate like a Premier League title and like maybe like a WSL title. I can't remember. And someone shouting at her from the crowd and like, Georgia, what's your number? And she turns around and she goes, 01 21 21. And it was really good. Or is it 0161? And maybe I've just killed it. It was like 0161 21. Because 0161 is the area code for Manchester. Anyway, let's
great
go
chat.
Back. Sorry, there's good, it's good video.
She's not interested in my weekend. We just want to hear about Georgia's number.
And her number.
It's fine.
Yeah, Manchester.
Yeah, smashing it. So I got to do the Man United game and Sophie did Man City. Man City have really been on a impressive run at the moment, just kind of quietly going about their business.
Yeah.
Don't want to make a big deal out of it, but yeah, definitely creeping their way up the table, scoring lots of goals. I think probably a combination of, you know, return from injuries. I wouldn't put it all down on the fact that Lucy Bronze and Steph Houghton are back. You know, they're good, but like they're not going to carry the weight of the whole team. But I think it definitely instills confidence in Manchester. They can play a much more fluid game without kind of the fear of, oh God, what if someone steals the ball and goes and attacks our makeshift defence? So I think combination of them coming back, a combination of players who are maybe playing out of position, having more time in those positions. And, you know, Georgia Stanway absolutely smashing it. More goals to her name. I think she's a very versatile player and sometimes that means you don't get to see her at her best. But now that she's playing in her more traditional midfield role, we're
yeah,
seeing
she
her fly.
She had to fill in at right wing back, which is just crap for her. So it's nice to see her kind of like be able to play where she wants to play and do what she's kind of supposed to do. I guess what's probably happened to Manchester City is what we're sort of talking about with Arsenal and the loss of Aaliyah Williamson. And maybe I had kind of understated how big the loss of Bronze and Steph Houghton would be because they're obviously in the later stages of their career and we don't think they necessarily have as bigger impact as they may have had in the past. But at the same time, that experience and leadership, like you say, it makes a massive impact. And now we're kind of seeing that with Arsenal. And you're maybe I'm sort of realizing as well with City, like, that actually will make a massive difference beyond just the footballing ability, which they were obviously missing defensively in a huge way. Just that leadership. That leadership is back there. You've got two very experienced players, one of them your captain. It means a lot for the squad.
Especially because they're both defenders. I think if you were missing players like that further up the field, it might have less of an impact. But you can't have a very unconfident back line that, you know, if you start to stress there, if you put pressure on a back line and they're not confident, you're going to leak goals. So that's the other fact that they're both defenders. You're seeing a big loss there. But their confidence is huge and their experience is huge.
We should caveat these results a little bit though, Chloe, because they've got Arsenal this weekend and that's the true test of how good they're going to be.
Is it?
I mean, that would be a massive challenge.
Yeah, I suppose you mean like Arsenal are bruised, a little bit broken, in a bit of disarray, but I think Man City have had like a nice chilled start to the new year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but it looks like a fresh squad. They look like they've gone away, gone into the Christmas break, obviously done the training, and just had a bit of a refresh, a re-look at where they are. You know, appreciated that the first half of the season hasn't gone to plan for them at all. And I think everyone can appreciate that. But, you know, when we've spoken previously, I think we always thought that it was going to be a chance for Gareth Taylor to really show his worth in January once you've got players back from injury and once you've had that brief break. And, you know, they've come out all guns blazing. I mean, what, 14 goals in three games, you know, back to their flying form. And I think this is the Man City that we were all expecting to see at the start of the season. So it's going to be interesting to see how they come up against Arsenal. But yeah, that will be the first challenge of this year. It's going to be a big one.
The clean sheets have been huge as well, because Taib, who had been playing in the place of Roebuck and Bardsley, she picked up a knock. So Kiara Keating, who's what, 18, I think, she started the game at the weekend, and she's kind of stepped up. So for her to be getting three clean sheets for the squad to be getting three clean sheets in a row, of which she's played a part, and I think two of them, is massive. And I think probably that comes back down to the defence as well. So you think with Elliot Roebuck, when she eventually does come back, that's going to be huge, because they're still doing this without their first choice goalkeeper.
Well, I think it's huge for an 18-year-old. I think you can't appreciate the kind of pressure that goalkeepers are under generally. And I obviously have a lot of time and appreciation for the goalkeeping profession. But
goalkeepers,
you know,
union, baby.
100%. But not only that, but she's 18 years old. She's playing at that level. That was her debut WSL appearance. You know, she's coming off the back of obviously having, you know, three other goalkeepers injured. And also, I suppose, when you look at someone like Taib, who's a much more experienced goalkeeper, in the kind of errors that she was making under pressure. And you don't see the same kind of errors being made with Keaton at all. She looks really confident. And that's amazing to
and
see.
I specifically did a piece, maybe October, November time, about how many errors City were making and how many errors Taib was making. And actually, it makes such a difference when you feel like you've got a goalkeeper that you can kind of like have a bit more confidence in, mm-hmm. a bit more trust in. Because even some of these games that City won before the break, notably that Birmingham City game, they were still conceding two goals against one of the weakest sides in the league. That doesn't look great. Like, there were a lot of matches that City were coming through, but they weren't getting clean sheets. That game against Leicester, where they conceded a goal in like the first 5 minutes, ended up smashing them. But to clean sheets feels like huge for these guys.
Yeah, literally feels like you're starting from the back and working your way up through the team. And if you're confident in that back line, and it's going to build and bleed through the team. And as I touched on earlier, it's allowing them to be more fluid, and it's allowing them to play their quick passing style of football without that fear of what's going to happen behind. So you're really seeing that. I mean, granted, Leicester put out a very kind of young team in the midweek game. But you're seeing them play like the old City again, and it's nice to see.
But I think when you look at kind of, you know, you're saying about not conceding goals, and obviously that's important for confidence. But, you know, when you look at how close the top of the table is going to become, I think it could even go down to something like goal difference. So if you're not conceding goals, that could be what actually matters at the end of the season. So, you know, credit to them for cleaning that area up.
So all in all, the vibes are pretty good at City, which is kind of crazy considering where they were like 3 months ago. And I was on this very podcast saying, like, sack Gareth Taylor. I think there are still, for me, question marks about his ability to lead them to where they want to be and with the squad that they have and the potential. Let's kind of flip to the other side of Manchester now. City up to fifth in the table. I think they will, regardless of everything, probably quietly creep up and claim that third Champions League spot somehow.
If not more.
Yeah, I mean, with the rate of Arsenal kind of sinking a little bit. But let's look at Manchester United, because they are in third at the moment. Another team that have been quietly doing their thing, getting good results against sides that they should be beating. But really, I think all of us want to see them step up against the top teams, because when they started this season, I looked at that back line and thought, that's a really good back line that Skinner's put together. Aoife Mannion, who spent a lot of her time at City injured, but is a very good defender. Hannah Blundell, who, you know, has been knocking on the door of contention for England, and a very, very good player who wasn't going to be starting at Chelsea and has already shown how good. Anya Batia, one of the most exciting fullbacks in the league. And Maria Torres-Dotter and Millie Turner, you know, two decent centre-backs. But when Man United have played the top teams, they kind of crumbled a little bit. That game against Chelsea, that game against Arsenal, should have really beaten City. So they're quietly doing their thing. They're beating teams they need to, but what's the ceiling? Have they reached it?
No, I don't think so. I think what we're seeing now, and what's good, is in the past, Man United have started seasons well, and then post-Christmas, that's when it tends to kind of
I feel like they always get really
bit.
Nice fixture lists. They always front-load their fixtures, Manchester United. I feel like under Casey Stoney and the WSL too, they front-load the fixtures. It always seems like, no, I'm not, this isn't a conspiracy, but what I mean is they
I was
always
about to say. Sorry, I didn't know that's
I didn't
how it works.
Mean, I didn't mean, didn't mean it's a conspiracy. What I mean is they always have quite nice fixture schedules where they get like the quote unquote easier games slightly early, so front loading their season a little bit, and then it's like it inflates the table a tad. Then they play the bigger teams and they get knocked down again, and then they kind of come. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think what's going to be really key for Man United is if they can keep this momentum into the new year, that will do wonders for their confidence, because they'll already feel like they're improving on previous years if they can maintain that into January, February. And they've got key players back like Jackie Gronin, Millie Turner. That's just only going to bolster their squad and boost their confidence. So I think that's probably the biggest thing for them, is getting the next few games under their belt, getting the next few wins under their belt and keeping that momentum. And they could then potentially be pushing Man City for that third spot.
Do you think though, because I'm looking at the squad they have now and it's a very exciting squad. Vilda Boa-Risa, I think, is a really exciting player. I think she's been really, really good in the second half of the season so far. But if United don't get that third Champions League spot with the kind of head start they were given City's season so far, they don't go to, say, a cup final, that would be a disappointing season, would it not, given the investment they've had?
I agree that it would be disappointing, but I think we can't still take away from the fact that, you know, Man United are still fairly new entrants to the WSL, and I think they've been one of the teams that have been the most consistent since coming up. And I think, you know, it's so difficult to enter the WSL. They obviously had so much back in. They had Casey Stoney, who was an incredible leader. Obviously, she's left and Mark Skinner's come in, and, you know, he's done incredible things with the squad. But I think that is the issue that you pointed out before, is that they are consistently great against the middle of the table teams. They're okay against the Reddings, the Tottenhams, the Evertons. But when it comes to playing the big boys, the big guns, it feels like actually they do crumble and fall apart. And I think that is the kind of additional level that they're failing to hit. And I think even this season, I don't think that's going to happen for them. I don't see them pulling this out of the bag and getting that spot. But I think next season, I think that's where their ambitions are definitely going to be. They're obviously there this year, but I don't think it's realistic.
You don't think they can hold on to third where they are now?
I think it will be a struggle. Yeah, I'm calling it.
I think Mark Skinner has time, and I think he knows that he has time. I think he's in there personally. It feels like he's there for the long run. He's there to build something. And it doesn't appear like he's under pressure to start winning titles now. I'm really intrigued to see Man United against Arsenal in the Conte Cup this week, with them coming off the back of an impressive performance and Arsenal being in the form that they're in. That could be interesting. And while it's not, you know, a league game, it could do wonders for potentially Man United's confidence if they do pull something out of the bag against Arsenal during the week.
Yeah, and United seem to love the Conte Cup. They beat City in their group, and I feel like they take it quite seriously, which is not to say that other teams don't, but obviously like Leicester knew against Manchester City that like the staying in the league is the priority, right? So they
would have needed a 9-goal swing.
Yeah, it's like City were always going to progress probably out that group in this rearranged fixture. Like the chances were pretty low that they were going to get through. So, you know, there's no point in losing some players, but it feels like United kind of realised that this could be a good competition for them to go in. So yeah, it'll be really interesting to see where these two go. I mean, I think that third spot is going to rotate over the next couple of weeks constantly, because we've now got like a couple of clubs Chelsea got two games in hand, some clubs with just one game in hand. So I feel like it's going to be a bit of a merry-go-round who sits in that third spot. But that's exciting for the league.
I think, you know, we shouldn't take our eyes off the top two either, because while Chelsea have two games in hand, it means the pressure's on them. They need to get those results to maintain their position. So I think that's going to make it really exciting. And then down the bottom of the table, with the form Leicester are in and the way they played at the weekend, and they're taking on Aston Villa next, you know, they could potentially pull Villa into that relegation battle, which I don't think any of us maybe saw coming. So yeah, it could be interesting at both ends of the table, not just Champions League spot, but, you know, top two as well.
Mandel's cross, it's a good one, and it's 5-0. Alessio Russo on target for the Red Devils, and a 5-star performance, has its 5th goal. Really good cross dug out by Blundell.
Thank you.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This week, Clive Anderson is joined by comedian Stephen K. Amos on My Seven Wonders, the show where guests select their personal seven wonders of the world. Stephen discusses his fame down under, who inspires his comedy, and how he got on during lockdown.
My dad, early 80s, came to stay with me for 2 weeks of the lockdown. I had no idea, after all these years, that he is a twat. I had no idea, Clive, that the heating in my house could be set to lava. And I said to him, why is the heating on so high? And without skipping a beat, he just said, I don't pay the bill here. Now, this is the kind of thing I have to deal with.
Listen to My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Championship, your beloved championship, all our beloved championship. Another league in which it's getting spicy. It's that second place. We've got third place in the WSL that's constantly changing. That second place in the championship is well up for grabs. Obviously, unfortunately, it doesn't really necessarily win you anything because only one team's going to go up. That might change fairly soon, but only one team is going to go up. And feels like that top spot is Liverpool's to lose at the moment. They had a tough start to this season, but they've been a bit of a runaway train since. A ridiculous squad. You know, Leanne Keenan's in ridiculous form. Katie Stengel, they've just added as well. She scored for the first time at the weekend. It feels like it's going to be really tough for anyone to challenge. But I suppose what the situation does show, Liverpool being 7 points clear, but London City Lionesses, Palace, both have games in hand. But I guess what this does show, which is really exciting looking ahead, especially for you, Chloe, being a Palace player, is that if Liverpool do get promoted next season, that promotion title spot is well up for grabs because you've got so many teams. It's so tight. You've got London City Lionesses on 22 points, Palace right behind them on 21, Durham right behind Palace on 21, then Bristol City and Charlton both on 20. All of those clubs super ambitious. Bristol City ? But want to get back to WSL. But a lot of those clubs super ambitious. Gone full time recently, if not this season, and want to be pushing. And that is so exciting for the league.
It's going to be a big competitive year. And I think it starts this year because I think obviously we're only halfway through the season. And whilst Liverpool had a small hiccup at the start with a loss to London City in the first place, Liverpool now know the pressure's on them because they're expected, I think, to be the ones that will be entering the WSL this season. So, you know, what they now need to do is maintain that consistent form. And like you said, they've got an amazingly strong squad. I mean, when you go and play Liverpool, you know that there's a certain amount of respect that you go into that game playing. You know, I've played with Rachel Fernie at Spurs, and she's a phenomenal leader herself, Melissa Lawley. It's just a great squad. And I think obviously with the addition of having Matt Beard as well, who's obviously an experienced WSL manager, they do look like the ones to beat, and they do look like they're going to be the favourites to win. But it only takes a matter of a few games finding bad form for that to, for the position to completely change. I mean, we'll be playing them this weekend, so I think that's going to be a very, very exciting game.
Well, they played Watford at the weekend, and they only won 1-0.
And Watford had been battered by a lot of teams.
Yeah, and they scored in like the 80-plus minutes.
Late.
So, you know, not to say, I mean, they got the win unbeaten in 16 games, but as you say, it only takes one result or two and suddenly you've got everybody on your heels.
Yeah, I mean, you only need a couple of, you know, draws even against teams that have, you know, parked the bus and that's it. And that's all of a sudden you've dropped points that you're expecting to get. And, you know, if London City and we continue to find form, you really can't be as cool it this year.
I mean, Liverpool got a lot of stick when they were sort of sliding down the WSL table and eventually got relegated. But I think this has been a good reset for them to kind of start again, build a lot of trust, I think, with fans and a lot of people in women's football with the investment that they've made, with the squad that they've put together, which obviously has the backing of a big global brand. And I think that's why people were so pissed off, because they thought, you know, you're one of the most profitable clubs in the world, and yet your women's team is suffering because you can't be asked to spend a little bit of extra cash on ensuring that they compete at the top of English women's football. You're not building them a space at your ridiculous new training ground. But it's interesting to see some of the clubs that are doing it differently and kind of breaking the mold as well. Because we talked about Coventry United and maybe that overambition got them into trouble. And it's really interesting to see what London City Lionesses are doing, because they're knocking on the door, broke away from Millwall a few seasons ago, having investment from this husband and wife duo, Anthony and Diane Culligan, and their company, which is kind of trying to build a sustainable model for their team, a full-time squad. And they've got some good players. Rihanna Jarrett went there in the summer. I think a lot of people were surprised at that move, because she could have gone to a, you know, potentially a bigger club. And she decided to go there. And I think it's really exciting to see that success, because talking about last week and how frustrating that is, you want to see successful models like Durham and London City Lionesses. And Durham have been knocking on the door for promotion for quite a few years now. Like, you want to see these teams be able to prove that sustainable model works. And that's why it's so great to see them pull away from Millwall for whatever reasons there were. I mean, it was kind of a sticky situation at the time, which, you know, lots of people can read up on, but kind of doing it in their own way.
Yeah, and I think they show as well that it takes a couple of seasons to find your feet. Even if you are a professional outfit, you're not going to be top table straight away. I think they were fourth and sixth in their first two seasons. But now they're knocking on the door, which is a great thing to see. I think then the next big test will be seeing a club like that that's got a different sort of foundation being successful in the WSL, because I think that in itself is a completely different challenge. And if you're kind of leaning on one source of funding, you know, it can be a little bit risky. We saw that at Coventry, where they had, whatever, 49% of stake in the company. And once they pull out, you know, it can crumble.
Yeah, you want to make sure there's other commercial things kind of supporting the development. I think what I did, having looked at this kind of ahead of the pod, was it was really surprising in the summer to see how many players left the club. There were 11 players whose contracts weren't renewed. And I felt that it was quite surprising. And I don't know if it's a sort of like a squad refresh thing. They also had quite a few managerial changes over the last couple of seasons. But I don't know if it's a squad refresh thing, or on a more kind of concerning side, it's a sort of like, we can't afford to keep these players on. We've got to start from scratch. Because I think the sign of a sustainable model is being able to secure players down for like a good amount of time.
Commitment.
Commitment, not having that revolving door, which, so even at the top of the women's game, we see, which is just like 1 year rotating contracts. Like, that's not sustainable for anyone. It's not sustainable for the players. And it's not sustainable for the club, because you're missing out on potential transfer fees because everyone's leaving for free at the end of the season. So I'd like to see a bit more of that reliance on saying we've got this squad together and we're keeping them together for a long time.
Well, I think, you know, when you look at where London City have come from, I mean, they were pioneers back in 2018. I mean, they were one of the first clubs in the Championship to go full-time and fully professional. And a lot of teams around that year, three, 4 years ago, were just nowhere near that level of training, the level of commitment, investment, sponsorships, and all the things that go on behind the scenes. So what they did, I think, actually was really impactful in how it progressed things with the Championship, because you started to see from that year on more and more Championships starting to get, you know, more and more contact hours and go into, or look at going into kind of hybrid models and going into full-time training. So we were obviously a little bit surprised to see that, you know, quite a few of their squad were leaving. But at the same time, I think, you know, when you step up into that full-time professional model, I think we all appreciated that you were going to have to get in players who were going to take you to the next level, because that is where your ambition's got to be in the Championship. It's for that WSL promotion spot. But, you know, they've done amazing things. And I know obviously Chris Phillips was there, and then I think he was there for about 6 months or so, and they brought in someone different. And, you know, it's a club that's gone from strength to strength. And you look at the kind of sponsorship that they're now getting from Kappa, and I think it was Nike originally. So, you know, they've done amazing things. And, you know, even when you look at the kind of the past, and, you know, in comparison to where Coventry were, I mean, Coventry were obviously on the brink of administration a couple of weeks ago. London City,
it's been a bit more of a gradual sort of fourth, sixth, like sort of climbing up the table, not the quick and speedy sort of Coventry United from like 0 to 100.
It's sustainable. And I think what it really highlights is that you need a good, genuine, proper investor who cares about the long-term growth of the club. It's not about making a quick buck. It's not about seeing a return on your investment in a year's time, because that just won't happen. So I think what they've chosen is a good, long-term, solid investor who's willing to see the club into the next stages of the Championship and maybe into the WSL this year, next year. But yeah, I mean, credit to them.
Let's talk Palace, though.
Hello.
I mean, firstly, on the contracts, because we all know that in women's football, you don't get particularly lengthy contracts. Starting to see a little bit more, especially the last like year or so. Look at Chelsea and City; they're locking players down to like 3-year contracts, which is, you know, we've never really seen that beyond sort of Lyon doing those sorts of things. But from a Palace point of view, from a Championship point of view, this summer just gone, I was talking about 11 players leaving London City Lionesses. Did you guys have that much turnover? Is that much turnover quite common? Because obviously we do see players leaving quite quickly because they don't sign long contracts. But, you know, that's quite a big overhaul. And what have you experienced?
I think it's difficult in the Championship because there are women or female players who are in all different stages of their lives. So I think in the Championship, you can have someone who's got a full-time job who is, you know, 30, 29 years old. You can also have a player, you can be playing alongside girls who have grown up in the setup, they've gone through the academy and they've come through, they've got their GCSEs and qualifications and then just gone into full-time football. So I think that's sometimes where the difficulty is that when clubs are starting to press into promotion or getting very serious about WSL spots, you have to look at the squad, where they're at with their lives and what they're able to really commit to. Because if you really have strong ambitions to get into the WSL, you need players who will be able to commit to either giving up their jobs, taking sabbaticals, or youngsters who are in a position to obviously just play full time. So sometimes you are starting to see that there's bigger turnovers happening where actually the squad that you had before isn't the squad that can take you into the next steps.
But Palace are knocking on the door for...
We are.
You are. Where do you see the rest of the season going? I mean, are you guys thinking more long term? Are you sort of thinking we're building now towards a serious promotion push next season? I feel like obviously your ambition for this season is still going to be to get as close as you can.
You've got Liverpool next, so
I think that's going to be the big game. I think it's no surprise that, you know, we're obviously coming up against the leaders, the kind of the favourites really to get into that WSL spot. And I think that's one of the issues with the Championship, and it's the difficulties that you only have that one spot. If it was for if there was a second spot there, I think it would be slightly more competitive. But sometimes you kind of see, oh, okay, well, it's clearly a runaway. You've got one spot and it's going to go to X, Y, and Z. But I think that is going to be the big game for us. But in terms of, you know, Palace's ambitions, from where we were last year to where we are this season, I mean, we've already surpassed our points tally from last season. We've already achieved the most amount of points that we ever have in our history. So, and the squad that we have, like, even behind the scenes, and this is not just me being really gushy, and I hope that none of the girls listen to this, but there's such a feeling of love and good vibes. Aww. And like, do you know what? We can actually bloody do this. And I think we believe in that. Yeah.
Give us some of the names to watch out for in the Palace side. Maybe some, apart from your good self, obviously.
Of course.
Any young talent that we should be keeping an eye on in the Palace team at the moment?
I've definitely got to give a shout out to Emily Orman. Goalkeeper Union, she's an 18-year-old, an incredible bloody talent. She's come over from Chelsea on loan. And
yeah,
she's
I've definitely seen her before.
Absolutely solid. And she was an integral part of the win against Durham this weekend. So I've got to give a massive shout out to her. She was incredible. But, you know, even players like Shiv Wilson has been absolutely phenomenal for us this season. Lizzie Waldy, who has been an absolute legend at the back and is also putting away goals because she just gets her head on anything that goes into the box. So I think those are my three players. But yeah, they're just, I love you all guys.
Oh, well, Palace crew, I hope you're listening. We're going to be keeping an eye on your big game this weekend and keep an eye on the Championship, guys, because it's heating up.
It's getting hot. It's very spicy.
There's a
long ball in, and Watford have it cleared, and Liverpool have finally broken the deadlock. Katie Stengel with her first goal for Liverpool, securing surely their fourth straight win.
I feel like every week there's some kind of Twitter storm that we can get our teeth into.
I mean, it's women's football.
It's always something. And this week, you know, the work's been done for us because the FIFA Best was announced, the FIFA Best Awards and the FIFA Best 11 and all that kind of stuff. And it was hilarious as always. And everyone was talking about it on Twitter. But if you haven't seen it already, Alexia Putellas won the Best Women's Player of the Year award, which isn't surprising given the season she had last year and the fact she won the Ballon d'Or. And she's going to clean up, I think, for a fairly long time. Emma Hayes won Best Coach, which was kind of surprising. And Christiane Endler won Best Goalkeeper. And Christine Sinclair picked up a special FIFA Best Award, which I think is sort of a you're a legend kind of trophy. But the thing that really got people talking was the Women's FIFA Pro World 11, which was unveiled, which is voted on by the players. And I've had a nerdy look into this and I'm still like sort of none the wiser, but also sort of the wiser. But essentially, there's a panel that's made up that vote on the Best Player of the Year award, which includes a coach, a captain of a nation, and a journo from that country. And then the players vote on the best 11. And there were some surprising names included. Christiane Endler was the goalkeeper. Alexia Putellas didn't get in that team, which makes no sense to any of us. And then you had Lucy Bronze, who obviously spent a lot of the past year injured. Millie Bright, which, you know, brilliant player, but not sure. Estefania Bonini, who hasn't played that many games for Atletico Madrid yet. Carly Lloyd in midfield, who also, you know, played a ton of domestic football. Marta, Alex Morgan. It feels like someone just went, can you name a women's footballer and chuck them a mic? And they were just like, Lucy Bronze? And they were like, yeah, put her down.
It's really frustrating because you feel like you're making progress and then these awards come around and you're like, great. The people who should be getting recognition for what they're doing on the world stage aren't. There was a severe lack of Spanish flavour in that team, in that there were no Barcelona players, which is just bizarre.
And I thought the Barcelona coach would win best coach as well. I think Emma Hayes is a phenomenal coach. I think she's brilliant, but I was surprised that she won that award. And Bev Priestman didn't even make the shortlist.
That's the one thing that really annoyed me. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Emma Hayes. I'm less kind of shocked that she won it, right? I would have thought Cortez would win it as well. But the fact that Bev Priestman wasn't in it, bizarre, absolutely bizarre. And obviously we love Serena Wiegman because, you know, she now coaches England, but she hasn't really done anything in 2021.
No, exactly. I was very surprised she made that list.
So it's stuff like that that's frustrating. Like you say, it feels a bit like a popularity contest. Mm. Who do you know that plays in these positions? It ends up feeling like a tick box. And when you've got players on there, like, you know, obviously Marta is an absolute legend, but she's feels like she's been on every team of the year list ever since it ever existed.
20 years.
And she just has a permanent spot on there. Alex Morgan hasn't played, I think I looked at her stats and was like, I think 15 domestic games and 5 goals. And then when you put those stats next to someone like Miedema or Sam Kerr or Frank Kirby or anyone like that, they're not on it. So
it was
Hermoso.
Like, FIFA Pro's most followed players.
One of those social media, like, who's got the most followers kind of vibe.
Literally that. I just couldn't understand it. And you kind of look at who's absent and you say, obviously, the Barcelona players aren't there. No Kerr, no Hermoso, no Harder, Martins, Putellas. And you're thinking, okay, who is making these decisions? Is it really the players? Players who play at elite level who know who's doing business on the pitch. And none of those big names were there. And I think when you have a look at people like Carly Lloyd, I mean, it's not a legends list. It's a 2021 list. I guess
what it shows is that even if you're playing the game, the exposure is so minimal that you don't know a lot of players around the world apart from the most famous ones.
But if you're playing at elite level, you'd be doing analysis because you'd be playing some of those people in those positions. So
yeah, but you wouldn't. That's 3,600 players. It's a lot of players. Some of them,
you have to be living under a rock if you don't know anything about Barcelona or Alexia Putellas or Hermoso. Like,
I agree with the argument in some sense that you may not be able to list, you know, a good enough best 11 yourself. But the fact that there are zero Barcelona players in there just blows my mind. Like I say, I just don't know how you can be involved in women's football at an elite level and not even consider Barcelona or no.
It's madness. I mean, some of that, you might as well have had Kelly Smith in there.
But do you think about like the discourse that often dominates a lot of women's football content is England and America. And it's not surprising that a lot of the players in this team are English or American because of that, because it's the dominating culture in football and especially women's football. And therefore, if you're like, oh, who should I name? Oh, yeah, Carly Lloyd, I definitely, you know, she's quite a legend, blah, blah, blah. Or Marta, yeah, I know her. She's really famous. Like, it's hard to get the, because some people might know that Barcelona are really good, but they may not have ever watched them play because I can't watch that league in the country they play in.
I appreciate that. But for argument's sake, I would say that this is quite a, you know, one of the biggest team awards going every year. And if I'm being asked to put forward players for that, would you not do a little bit of research? Like,
no.
Okay.
Oh my God, come on. You know what these guys are doing. They're literally just like,
well, that's the problem.
Putting together a thing and filling it in within 2 seconds.
That's the problem.
They're not doing research.
It's part of the problem. If we're looking at growing the game, you know, obviously the players are focusing on playing, but let's be real, like they're also carrying the weight of growing the game. And part of that is to try and take some of these things a little bit more seriously, because otherwise you end up having, once again, women's football in the news for all the wrong reasons, because we're all sitting here going, what the fuck's going on? Who made this list? Someone who's never played football. And then it turns out that it's actually female professional football players. So maybe it's about putting a little bit more emphasis on taking stuff like this seriously, because otherwise we'll be here in 10 years' time with Carly Lloyd still on the bloody pitch and Marta, and they'll both have retired by that stage.
Yeah, and I think that's why you could kind of say, like, well, this sort of screams for we need more exposure so that the global game is grown, not just the leagues in, you know, America and the leagues in England and a couple of teams in Europe, because, you know, Wendy Renard's in there because she plays for Lyon and has won a shitload of Champions Leagues, but they had a terrible season last year. So you're kind of like, it is like you say, a popularity contest, but you kind of got to, I don't think too much work needs to be done by the players. I think there's a lot more work that the wider kind of football community could do.
Agreed, but what's kind of an easier, quicker fix? You know, it's not just one or the other. I think it should be both. I think it should be a collective effort to improve these things. Obviously, the exposure and the growth of the game is needed, but I don't think asking players who are taking part in this to not just stick down a name they know. It's important.
I think
putting that emphasis on the importance.
I think it's that. If there's not more care and attention being taken with lists like this, I think it will just invalidate the award. There's no point. Everyone who knows about women's football, who has any kind of decent interest in women's football and who follows it, is going to know that list looks like an absolute joke. So it's kind of like they can name who they want at this point. It doesn't really matter. They can name a Sunday league team. It really doesn't matter because that list is not reflective of the actual situation.
Savage.
We are annoyed.
No, I know. I mean, part of me, when these things come out, I'm like, oh, it's just only awards. Who cares anyway? And then part of me is like, no, they're really important. So I kind of flip between them. But I do think it's kind of a two-way street that, you know, Steph Horton, England captain, was on Jamie Carragher's podcast saying she never watches women's football. So when then the task comes to talk about the global game, your knowledge probably isn't going to be great because you admit that you haven't watched a lot of women's football. So I think it's really hard that sometimes you can't put all the trust in the players.
True, but Steph Horton plays against Spain or the Netherlands or France, so she can at least name some of the players that she's come up against that are really bloody good or that kind of scare her as a defender. And I think that has a little more validity than just kind of what's a big name I can remember.
We'll have to see what happens next year with these awards, see if it completely changes.
But I also agree with you in that, like, there's so many other more important things to be stressing about and focusing on women's football, but this just irks everyone every time.
I always don't understand how people lose their minds over BBC Sports Personality of the Year so much. I'm like, it's a made-up award from a broadcaster. Why are you so obsessed and, like, getting so angry about it?
You expect everyone to, and I get it because I'm, you know, in the women's football bubble and you expect everyone to have the same kind of knowledge of women's football as you have, but they don't. In the same way that I'll vote for, I don't know, if there's a tennis award or whatever award, I don't know in-depth stuff about tennis as much as football, but I know who I like and I know who's decent, so I'd vote for them that way. And it's the same thing in women's football. You're like, you guys have put up quite a few videos of Miedema goals and she's broken records. I can remember that. I'll pick her. They're not going to kind of, you know, troll through other, especially if it's BBC. It's going to be what games they've watched. And now I sound like I'm giving the opposite argument to what I said for the FIFA Pro, but but this is the public, and I would actually prefer a public of 11, and I think it would be a more reflective public 11 than
that's what's quite funny about this, because all the tweet, the angry tweets was like, oh, who could vote for this? And I'm like, plot twist, it's the players. Anyway, we could literally sit here all afternoon and talk about this. We haven't talked about the Asian Cup, which said we would, so let's fly through that. Otherwise, we will be here all afternoon. It's going to have a big impact on the WSL sides, but I don't want to get too sort of like, oh, whiny managers talking about AFCON and how much they're going to miss. Like, this is an exciting tournament. There's lots of WSL players going to be involved. Australia have lost the last two editions to Japan and lost both of those finals 1-0. So I feel that there's going to be a bit of a Matilda's revenge vibe going on this one. They've obviously got an exciting, young, talented squad. They did well at the Olympic Games. I feel like, you know, Japan have struggled in recent years, especially at major tournaments. So I feel like this could be Australia's time to shine in this competition.
I'll be honest, what I'm most excited about is looking at who's going to progress to the World Cup from it. Because Australia are hosting, they've already bagged a spot. So it means that there's
a new voice.
Which is what I find quite exciting. I think you've got the likes of Japan and South Korea and China are probably most likely to go through. But who else? That's what I'm excited about. I really hope Thailand get through again and make another major tournament, because I know they made the Canadian World Cup in 2015, but their story was really highlighted on the world stage in 2019, despite being thrashed 13-0 by the USA. So I'd love to see them in it again. And it's finding out who's going to take that next spot, because it's exposing more teams to the world stage. And that's just expanding women's football. So yes, obviously excited to see who wins it. But for me, I just can't wait to see who nabs all those spots.
And it's fun as well to have a kind of like all or nothing qualification situation. Obviously, most of Europe, it's a bit of a slow burn, but it's quite fun to be like, right, you're playing in this tournament and this is how you're going to work out who qualifies. I think that's quite fun. It will obviously have an impact on WSL clubs. Arsenal missing a lot of Aussies, City missing some Aussies, Chelsea missing Sam Kerr, Manu Ibuchi's going to be going to play with Japan, Jisoo Young's going to be going to play with South Korea. So it's one to watch, really. Kicks off on Thursday, this Thursday. Did see a tweet from Amy Ruschke that it's going to be on Premier Sports, I think, in the UK, which is like, unfortunately, somewhere, another place you'll have to give your money to stream games. But hopefully we might be able to find some kind of some streams or something elsewhere. Not, I don't condone legal streaming, but, you know, like, sometimes you can watch it on like the Matilda's YouTube page and stuff like that. Anyone else that you guys are looking out for?
Yui Hasegawa. She's a big loss for West Ham, and I think was quite clearly missing when they played Spurs on Sunday evening. She's fantastic link-up player between defence and forwards, and has been a huge player for West Ham this season. So she's a big loss for them, but also one that I would be looking out for Japan.
We've been talking for far too long.
Time flies when you're having fun.
It really does.
Yeah. And when you're angry.
Yeah. Where are you guys going to be this weekend?
I will be at home at Bromley, playing the big game against Liverpool.
Is your finger going to be better by then?
I mean, I'll be able to wave at people.
So you won't be in the squad?
I'm not sure at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
We hope so.
We've got quite a few fans coming to the game. Nice. So I think I might be on fan duty, sort of meeting and greeting.
Meet and greet.
Yeah.
The celebs.
Seeing the
signing
squad.
Signing some autographs, or maybe not signing, but
just
you know,
kind of like, I've still got my right hand. I'll be
okay.
Fine.
Be
yeah.
Fine.
I've got like the under 14s, Crystal Palace girls coming along to watch the game.
Aww,
so that'd be really cute. So,
very cute. You're on a creche duty then.
It's not crash duty. I mean, if they listen to this, it's you're absolutely not. You're a fantastic, phenomenally very mature players. But yeah, that should be fun, sort of meeting the younger squads.
Love
it's
that.
Good fun.
Rachel, where are you at?
I am off to West Ham this weekend,
as far
as I remember. And obviously, Sophie's going to Reading. So
the curse.
No, the good luck charm.
The good luck charm.
Yeah, I'm the curse. So that's why we've chosen the game the way we have.
And I'm doing Arsenal Manchester United, the Conti Cup on Wednesday night. You're maybe at Spurs?
Hopefully at Spurs for Conti Cup. Looking forward to that one. A bit frustrating that quarterfinals aren't on televised, but hey ho, here we are.
And I'm going to be at Brighton on Sunday. Brighton women, I think they're playing Chelsea on Sunday. So Chelsea's first game since the 15th of December. Well, the first game is actually Wednesday night against West Ham, but they're first WSL game in a very long time, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. That's it for today's episode of Upfront on Football Ramble Presents. If you've got any questions for us, tweet us at Football Ramble, at Floyd Tweet, at Girls on the Ball, or at Morgie_89, and we'll see you all next week.
Football Ramble Presents is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.